Welcome to the WWE Podcast, your place for the most passionate wrestling analysis on the web.
Just turn Roman heel. What is WWE waiting for?
When other wrestling podcasts put you to sleep, you can count on the WWE Podcast to keep you engaged and asking for more.
I've been watching wrestling for over 20 years, and that was one of the best matches I've ever seen.
This is unlike any other wrestling analysis. So without any further delay, let's get the show started right now.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast. It's Thursday, September 19th, 2019. Today, I've got Ashley Mann, and we are discussing everything that happened in this week of WWE, touching on a lot of the big stuff. We didn't get into absolutely everything, but we touched on The Fiend for quite some time. We touched on the whole Rusev return, King Corbin, the underutilization of Chad Gable, and the whole silly storyline of him being too short. I mean, we covered a lot of good stuff and really got, I think, some good conversation in that I think you all enjoy. So that's going to come up in just a second. But first, thank you so much for joining me. Everybody can follow me on Twitter at the WWE Podcast and on my website at WWEpodcast.com. Yesterday, I announced that I'm going to be doing video on my Patreon feed, which you can check out at patreon.com/WWEpodcast. So I did my first attempt at the video, and boy, did that not work out very well. I failed like I was it was the first time I was using my computer. I felt like I was my grandmother using, you know, dial-up internet for the first time. It did not go well. I tried doing a live stream on YouTube, which apparently I need additional software for. Then I did it on my phone, but I had some restrictions on my phone. And then I tried just flat out just recording a plain video on my phone and then uploading it somewhere, but the file was too big. It was a whole big thing. So I'm not giving up. I'm going to continue to try to put video on Patreon. It's coming. I'm doing it as soon as I can. And I know I announced it, but it looked like everything was up and running, and then I hit record and it went all to hell. So again, I'm not giving up on it. It's going to be coming as soon as I can use my, you know, my skills and technology and get this thing going. So that is all on patreon.com. But while you're waiting for the video, you can also get an experience that is completely ad-free. And that's all on patreon.com/WWEpodcast, where every single episode is completely ad-free, which is always a nice thing. You don't have to hit that, you know, ahead 30 seconds button on Apple Podcasts. You don't have to scrub through to skip the commercials or just sit and, you know, bear through them. You just have to listen. It's that simple. How great would that be? There's just zero ads. You know, in a podcast world filled with ads, and an internet world filled with ads. Hell, you can't even watch an Instagram story without coming across a car or some kind of food or what have you that interrupts your experience. So you make that go away by going to patreon.com/WWEpodcast. So thank you so much for everybody who has done that. And again, guys, welcome to the show. And I am always excited for Thursdays. Thursdays are my favorite, I would say, of the entire week when I get to discuss everything about WWE with my co-hosts that I absolutely love talking with. And this week is Ashley Mann, who has her own show with her own team at Wrestle Rewind that you guys can check out. It's on Facebook Live. It's on every podcast app out there. It's a great listen. Good chemistry between all of the podcasters there. All of them are very knowledgeable, entertaining. I would highly recommend that you check out Wrestle Rewind. It's a tongue twister, though. My brain is, it has a tough time saying Wrestle Rewind. So if you say it really fast, I can guarantee you that you will be tongue twisted. So now that you're probably doing it and saying it out loud and to yourself, guys, I won't be babbling anymore. I'm just going to get to the conversation with Ashley and myself. And again, as a reminder, on Sunday, I'll be back with the Wrestling Nostalgia version of the show, hopefully with some live video. As a quick thing, too, with the video deal, obviously I can't do a video for when I have conversations with my co-hosts. So, because you won't hear anything other than my end of the conversation. So you won't hear their end. Because I have headphones on and all of the audio goes through my headphones. So obviously you can't hear if I'm doing a live video on my laptop. So if I do live video, when I get live video all set up, it'll be for my solo shows. So that's just a little caveat. But anyway, guys, I'll be back Sunday and then a regular schedule resumes next week. So everybody enjoy their last weekend of summer because summer is over. iPhone 11 and 11 Pro release day is tomorrow. For those of you that give a damn, I do. I like to waste my money on iPhones. And it's a big sports weekend. Football's back. Baseball's winding down. Fall is just an awesome freaking time, right? There is just so much happening in the fall. The weather gets cooler. Those of you that hate hot weather, it goes away. Hell, if you're up in the Northeast, it was 37 degrees here this morning. 37 effing degrees. And it's still summer. It makes me want to vomit because winter here lasts about 16 months. So, again, it's really an awesome time. Leaves are changing. Sports are in their playoffs and football's in full swing. WWE is ramping up their new season with Fox coming, with AEW coming, NXT's on Wednesdays. There's a full plate of stuff. It's an awesome time to be a sports fan in general. Okay, that's enough. Let's get to Ashley Mann and myself discussing this week in WWE. And everybody, enjoy the weekend. As always, I'll talk to you next time. All right, it's Thursday, and that means co-host time. This week, Ashley Mann joins me. And not only is she a podcast host now, but she is an official contributor to the website WWEpodcast.com, which you guys can check out her first article all about The Fiend. So, Ashley, welcome back to the show.
That's right. Thank you so much for having me. I almost forgot about that. Yes. Definitely check it out. Let me know what you guys think. Either good or bad, you won't hurt my feelings. I love any type of feedback because it makes me think one way or another. So definitely check it out.
It is worth checking out. And that's definitely the first topic I want to talk to you about in just a second. But before I do that, I want to be able to give you a second to let everyone know about another show that you do that is actually airing Thursday night, tonight. So tell everyone about that.
Yes, thank you. The other show that I'm on is called Wrestle Rewind. We are on all of your favorite podcast networks, Apple, Spotify, all that good stuff. Also on Facebook. On Facebook, we go live every Thursday at 8:30. It's a video feed. You can chat with us. We answer comments, questions, anything like that. So, yeah, definitely check us out if you have some time. And, again, let me know what you think about that, too.
It's worth a check out for sure. And you guys, every week I'm noticing since you've told me about it, you guys are improving, and not just from discussion standpoint, but from production and how the set looks. I'm just noticing improvements. So definitely everybody go and check that out. I think it's going to be a big deal moving down the line. So
thank you.
Yeah, definitely. And speaking of The Fiend, though, as I said, that's the number one topic I want to ask you about, because we certainly got a lot of The Fiend this past week. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I loved it. Just as a very simple overview from my perspective, what was your take on The Fiend attacking Seth Rollins? You know, we had a lot of Firefly Funhouse segments throughout Monday Night Raw, and then attacking Kane to end that show. So give me The Fiend as your week in review here.
Of course, I like everyone else, I loved it. I love how they incorporated The Fiend, the character, throughout the entire show and just kind of threaded it throughout almost every segment, or every other segment. There was either a promo that he was doing, like, you know, one of the backstage segments or anything like that. And then at the end, coming out and actually attacking Seth, Kane, and then having that stare down with Seth, I think it was beautifully done. The only thing that concerns me, maybe in a selfish way, is if we start to get too much of him, that maybe it will water down his surprise and shock value, and that effect and that feeling that you get when you see him. So that's the only thing that I'm concerned of down the road. But especially since they're obviously building towards the match, I feel that we're going to be seeing him probably every Monday up until the Hell in a Cell, at least at this point. So, and then of course, if he ends up winning the title, we have that whole scenario as well, because is it going to be like a Brock Lesnar type schedule and just be, I don't want to say part-time, but sporadic, or is he going to be there every show or every other show? So it's interesting to see what route that they take this character. And that obviously they have a lot of stock built into him. So I'm hopeful that they just keep him close to the best as much as they can, but still give us that character that we all love. So I'm curious to see what direction they take it going forward.
I think this is, I agree with what you said, and I think that this is something that WWE knows is special. This is something that does not come along very often, and the interest in this character, they cannot get him booed. I don't think it is possible to get the Fiend booed, and it has proven such so far. He has attacked nothing but Hall of Fame legends. He's attacked Finn Balor. He's attacked Seth Rollins. He attacked Kane, and I didn't hear a single boo in the audience for that, and I think the key here is it's called the law of diminishing returns, and mm-hmm. I think that the more they exploit the Fiend, I think the less special it will feel. So that's exactly what my point has been over the last couple of weeks, that WWE knows they have something good, and oftentimes when they know they have something good, guess what they do? They overexpose it, and they just keep hammering it and hammering it and hammering it, and they think that more is better, right? So that's not the case here. I don't need to see the Fiend every week. I would actually like to see him once every few weeks. I know that people are super impatient, and the people in the arena would be really disappointed. But you could still do a Firefly Funhouse, maybe here and there, and it would feel really special to the people at home, because the people at home are 99.9999% of the people that are watching versus the 10,000 in the arena. So I personally, that's the key here. And whether or not Bray Wyatt takes the championship at Hell in a Cell, I really, this isn't a prediction show, but I really don't know which way they're going to go here.
Yeah, me either. And I'm so torn on that as well. I'm super happy that, because I would not have an answer, but that time revealed Bray Wyatt himself, meaning not the Fiend. So I feel that that's one of the things that kind of sticks out to me that shows me that WWE knows exactly what they have with him, and it's going to keep him sacred, kind of like they did with the Undertaker character, because they haven't revealed everything all at once. It would have been very easy for them, the second that he started picking up that momentum and that popularity, it would have been very easy for them to just have Bray Wyatt and the sweater vest and, you know, the khakis come out, or do whatever they were planning on doing with that version of him and have him come out within that first month. So I think that is a positive, and that's something that we should all be, you know, proud of WWE on. And I think that could be something that they could use if he does end up winning the title at Hell in a Cell, so we don't have to see a title defense, and it makes sense why he wouldn't be wrestling or the Fiend wouldn't be there, because that version of Bray would be in his place. And again, I wouldn't want to see that version of Bray every week either, but I think they can kind of alternate and just get by with that. So they do have the luxury with this type of character to go so many different ways without actually having the Fiend itself there. So I think that's obviously a plus that they have.
It is, and the whole thing here is self-control of WWE, being able to only sporadically use him to make him more in more demand. It's actually a economics concept that is the most basic that you can get. It's supply and demand. The more supply you have, the less in demand it is. And it's the same concept here with Bray Wyatt. I really believe that. And as far as what direction they're going, I think ultimately if you're going to ask me today on September 19th, is the Fiend going to become the Universal Champion at Hell in a Cell? I would say no. And the only reason I would say no is not that he's going to take a clean loss, because the Fiend absolutely should not be beat. I don't even know if I ever want the Fiend to be defeated clean at this point. I don't even know the person who I'd want to do that. The Fiend is too hot. So the reason I don't think the Fiend is going to win at Hell in a Cell is because of the Firefly Funhouse, when he had the clock that said 3:16, hit it with a hammer, and it said 11:19. We all know what 11:19 is, the day The Undertaker debuted. So if that is indeed going to be the case, the next pay-per-view is Survivor Series. So does Bray Wyatt challenge The Undertaker at Survivor Series? You can't do that as Universal Champion. It makes no sense. The Undertaker doesn't need to be anywhere near a title picture at this point. So I think that if they are going with The Undertaker sooner rather than later, Bray Wyatt probably doesn't win this match at Hell in a Cell.
Yeah, and I think the beauty of it also being in a Hell in a Cell is, as crazy as this is going to sound, they can get away with not having a clean winner in that match. They can have Braun Strowman come out and interfere. And again, not saying that I would want this to happen per se, but they have different options with this match as well. It's not a straight one-on-one regular rules match. It's a special type of environment for this type of character. So I think, in a way, it was kind of smart for them to throw this match out there. In a way, if they were that pressed to do it, it makes sense timing-wise, because like you said, Survivor Series is after that. And depending on what they want to do with Bray and The Undertaker going forward would definitely depend on, I would say, starting there. So I think that definitely plays a factor as well.
I think it does too. And I mean, this whole storyline is the best thing WWE's had. I mean, just overall the most interesting, captivating. And if y'all read Ashley's article on my website, you'll get more of an in-depth idea of exactly why we love The Fiend. And I think there's more to this than meets the eye. And so definitely check out our article for that. But this is a very captivating, intriguing, just so much different character that is, excuse me, is on fire right now. And at the same time, Seth Rollins can't afford to lose either. I mean, he just defeated the Beast. He defeated a monster. Now he's going to defeat a Fiend. If he does, again, it can't be clean. And Seth Rollins, at the same time, really can't afford to lose clean either. So this is when you have two guys that can't afford to lose clean to the either. Then that just begs for and screams a wonky finish. Somebody's interfering, maybe a double count out. Actually, there are no count outs. Maybe it's, I don't know, a double stoppage of the match. I don't know. Since it's inside Hell in a Cell, there's no rules, so that begs people to interfere. So I think that is what we get, is a just crazy finish, maybe multiple people interfering to exact their revenge on the Fiend. I don't know. Maybe there's an Undertaker appearance. That could be. But ultimately, this is going to be a finish that I think people are probably angry that there's not a clean finish, but it makes sense that neither man can afford to lose to the other.
Yeah, and I think one more thing before we move on from this. I think what we may not get answers to right now, but correct me if I'm wrong, but the whole reason, the start of this whole storyline, I may have been by mistake, because, and it may not have been what they were even originally planning, the whole leak from the venue that's hosting Hell in a Cell this year actually leaked out that The Fiend was going to be there and either face Braun Strowman or Seth Rollins. And then I think maybe a couple days later on Raw, they had to address it. And then that's when Bray did the whole skit with the Vince puppet. So I wonder if they didn't even plan on having this match at Hell in a Cell. And maybe they had just mentioned to the arena that, you know, The Fiend was going to show up or something to that effect, because they probably planned on doing something with him there. And now they have to play catch up and try to figure their way out of this mess. So just kind of curious if this was the original plan to begin with.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? To be honest with you, who knows?
Right.
A lot of the times, you know, the things that the WWE tells the arenas, especially when they're like, you know, a dark main event, it's going to be, I don't know, Randy Orton versus Kofi Kingston. And, you know, 8 times out of 10, they end up switching the main event to something else or not delivering. I mean, there's reports all the time of those advertised dark matches never coming to fruition. So as far as the information that WWE leaks to the, you know, the arenas and so forth, I would take that with a grain of salt, but you could be right. Absolutely. So moving on, though, I guess the second biggest thing of the week, maybe arguably, although we did crown a new King of the Ring, and I want to talk to you about that too, is Brock Lesnar's return. And, I you know, before I give my thoughts, what did you think about all that?
I was surprised. I was kind of wondering if, since we're getting closer and closer to Fox, if Brock was going to show up, or if he was just going to show up the day of, or if he wasn't going to show up at all. So I was definitely kind of curious, but I wasn't expecting it to be this week. And seeing him with the beard kind of reminded me of his UFC days. So that was kind of interesting. And it was just, I'm curious because they kind of backed themselves into a corner, I think, with this one, because Kofi, a lot of people think it's Kofi's time, and I believe you do as well. Not trying to put words in your mouth. I think that's your feeling. So I'm curious to see if this is going to be the moment that Fox, you know, a sports network-ish, would want, that moment of having Brock defeat Kofi Kingston and just that visual of him holding the title on that show, or it could be another crowning moment for Kofi Kingston. If they're truly behind him and want to go full force with him as their lead babyface, having him beat Brock Lesnar would be huge. So again, this is another one where I'm kind of curious to see which direction they go in. I think it's time, and I think they should pull the trigger with Brock beating Kofi. And I'm curious to see the build-up to this. If they mention Brock's losing streak lately, or if Heyman just completely brushes over that, doesn't mention it at all, or if they allow Kofi to bring it up. So I'm curious to see the build to this one.
Me too. And I said this too last night, for those that listened, that this is a great reset button for Brock. Those that thought he was getting stale and really just completely used up every possible thing that he could have done on Monday Night Raw with everybody he could have done it with. I mean, they really explored all angles, I think, with Brock there. And having Raw be his home since he returned in 2012, I think SmackDown is a perfect fit for him, not just because they're moving to Fox, but although I think that's why he's going to be moving there with the draft. And but I think it's just a great way to reset and refresh the Brock Lesnar character. Yes, of course, the beard helps. I like him with a beard. He also grew out his hair a little bit on top. Like, he did subtle things that made him feel just a little bit different, and I like that. And Kofi Kingston is champion. Everybody knows how I feel. I've been over Kofi Kingston as champion for quite some time, and that's no secret. But Brock Lesnar would add, I think, a lot of credibility to a network that is all about sports. And Brock Lesnar has just coming off the heels of a clean loss to Seth Rollins. I think that Vince McMahon wants to build a little bit around Brock Lesnar. While he's not the future, Brock Lesnar, with his very minimal schedule, can really stretch out his career as long as he wants to, because he's not doing part-time, he's not doing full-time, he's just doing once in a while. And I think that, you know, that is what you want to do, is maximize your biggest star and have him last as long as he can, minimize possible injury, and keep him in the WWE under Vince McMahon's thumb, which is what he wants to do, as long as he can. And I understand that. I totally get it. And for them to debut on Fox and have Brock Lesnar beat Kofi Kingston would be a great way to kick off the that mega deal that they made a year and a half ago with Fox. And it's just the way to start off. If Kofi Kingston beats Brock Lesnar clean, I told everybody this last night, I'm going to warn you, my next three podcasts will be labeled explicit. there'll be that red E on my podcast for the next week. It would make no sense to me. I understand the platform and the temptation of some people and the case that you would make for why it would be good. There's you know, it's going to be the biggest, you know, rating. And of course it is. The first show is always going to be the biggest. So there'll be the most number of eyeballs. It'll be the perfect place for Kofi Kingston to get the most exposure to really solidify himself. But what does that do to Brock Lesnar? Brock Lesnar, a guy that was in the UFC and dominated and came in and won the UFC Heavyweight Championship and came back to WWE and destroyed John Cena in that SummerSlam match of three, 4 years ago, and beat Triple H. I mean, beat everybody he came in contact with. Seth Rollins, Roman Reigns a number of times, Randy Orton. I mean, go down the list. AJ Styles, Daniel Bryan. And so it is just...
And ending the Undertaker streak.
Yes. Oh, yeah. I mean, there's that too. And that's a small detail, right? So
right.
There's no good reason to have Kofi Kingston defeat Brock Lesnar clean. If Kofi Kingston in some weird way ends up beating Brock Lesnar via DQ or something that I mean, I don't think they should do that, because this is a main event that they have set out 3 weeks in advance.
And they can't have a screw finish on their debut show on Fox. They can't.
No, but what I think they will do is, outside of the typical Brock Lesnar 15 second to 30 second match, I think they'll have an actual maybe 10 minute match with Brock Lesnar. Give Kofi Kingston some shine, and, you know, make him look credible against Brock instead of just getting squashed like he has done to so many other opponents. And that would give Kofi the rub. Make him a legitimate threat. I'm fine with him getting a couple of near finishes, maybe hitting Trouble in Paradise a couple of times with Brock kicking out and putting on a good match to make people believe, oh my God, Kofi could maybe do this. And then ultimately Brock pops up, hits him with an F5, boom, goodnight the lights, and we have a new WWE champion.
Yeah, I couldn't have said it better myself. And just for the record, part of me kind of hopes Kofi wins just so I can hear those episodes marked E. So,
I'm not. People think I'm joking.
I know you're not. That's why, like selfishly, I want that to happen just so I can hear it, because it would be phenomenal episodes.
It would be people. Let me just tell you this. If that happens and I have the E, I mean, like, it's not going to be a contrived, forced, oh, I'm just doing it to, you know, pop ratings. Like, and people, I can guarantee you that after that happens, I'm going to have, like, you know, 50 new reviews on iTunes that are destroying me, I'm sure. But I'm telling you right now, like, it would be a real thing. So now you've got me fired up for something that probably won't happen, but is in the realm of possibility for real. So
Right.
Goodness. So transitioning on to the women's division here, I did want to ask you about Sasha Banks and Bayley and their interaction with Charlotte and Becky. The four horsewomen here are teaming up against one another. And this past week on Monday Night Raw, this was a segment that I actually really didn't like for one reason. And that was because of the just terribly choreographed chair play sword fight that Becky and Sasha that they had. I'm just going to stop talking. I'm just asking your opinion in general. What about this whole program and including the Monday Night Raw?
Yeah, that whole chair sword fight thing kind of killed it for me. It was a good concept, but they went back and forth way too much. Like, it should have been like, maybe, yeah, one gets over on the other, but that next shot should have been it. Like, it was just way too cutesy, just way too much. Like, this is supposed to be a bad ass, you know, fight, and they're supposed to be mad at each other. Sasha is supposed to be mad, and Becky should still be very angry for the attack that Sasha did on her from the very beginning, because that was a brutal beatdown. So I'm not really sure how it's going to go in that aspect. The whole brawl and the mustard thing and everything like that, like, the mustard really cracked me up. I think it's going to be – now, I'm blanking, but their match is going to be in the Hell in a Cell itself,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
Okay. So I think that would be very good. I think that's going to be probably match of the night, just because, you know, Becky is a tough chick, and Sasha has been in there before, so she has the experience. She knows what it feels like, so she already has that kind of advantage. And so, obviously, they have plenty of time to really work everything out. So I think it's gonna be a great match, but I just wish it would kind of be that two fighters going after each other, kind of in the serious sense that it was when Ronda Rousey was there. Again, I'm not comparing Sasha to Ronda Rousey at all. I'm just saying, just take it seriously like that. Sasha came back with a bang, and I think they're kind of simmering her down a little bit. I don't think she is as hot as she was when she first came back. She shouldn't be losing right now. She should be on a winning streak. So with that, I think that they need to kind of protect Sasha a little bit more. And Charlotte and Bayley, I'm just so all over the place with that one. And I guess Charlotte is a babyface now, confirmed. So that's interesting. It's just, I don't know. I feel like Charlotte turning was kind of just reciprocated from the whole Sasha and Becky angle. So I'm not really sure what they're going to end up doing with Charlotte after this, because she's better as a heel. I think everyone can agree on that.
No question about it. That Charlotte was born to be a heel. When she first did her babyface turn, it just looked so uncomfortable. It was like she was trying to force to smile, because that's what babyfaces do. They come out and smile, right. And it looks so unnatural for her. And there's no question that she is better as a heel. If I were her on this babyface run, I would change 95% of nothing. Like, I mean, I would just continue to be arrogant. I would continue to say you're the queen. I wouldn't pander to the audience, because none of that is good for Charlotte. She never comes across very well when she does these things, and it doesn't feel natural. So I wouldn't attack the audience. I just wouldn't pander to them. I mean, there's a difference. Right. And so on top of that, I wouldn't smile all the time. Like, you know, it's just like a babyface 101 school is what you do. Not for Charlotte. I don't need that. her getting beat down by Sasha and Bayley automatically make her a babyface because, hey, that's 2-on-1. That's not fair. You automatically, psychologically, just side with Charlotte. Like, hey, come on, you know. And so that's kind of how Charlotte turned babyface. And, you know, I'm fine with it as long as she doesn't transform into what she was before. What happened on Monday Night Raw, I don't need to get too much into it. If you guys want to listen to my insane rant about it, it's on my Monday Night Raw review show. It absolutely took me out of everything. And it was just ridiculously amateur hour. But outside of that, I like Bayley and her. While I didn't get the full turn yet of Bayley, it's happening in baby steps, which I like and I'm fine with. Mm-hmm. And I hope that they continue it and they don't just, you know, decide to put her in no man's land of, oh, she's a tweener, or, you know, well, she's a babyface that is delusional. No. I need clear direction. I don't need these in-between gray area people. And so far, so good. She stopped with the Bayley buddies. She did anything she could to win at Clash of Champions, and then she ran away. I loved that.
So great.
That was awesome.
Did you see her response to that on Twitter?
No.
Someone tagged her, like, the gif of her running back, and she said she left her hair straightener on in the back, so that's why she was running back. It's just so great. So just
that's
little things.
Really funny.
It was.
I didn't see that, but it's what I wanted to see from Bayley, that she's changing her moral compass, that mm-hmm. she's not going to care how she wins. She'll do anything to keep the belt. That is what heels do. So if she could just shave that ponytail off and just change her music and her, you know, rainbow outfit colors, I think we have a full turn. And then just start being nasty with the audience. Like, you guys don't appreciate me. I'm trying to be a role model for your kids. What the hell is wrong with you? Eventually get to that point. And if that's what they're building to, I'm all about it. I'm all about that for Bayley.
Same here.
And one more thing about that, to your point about Sasha not being as relevant, she has cooled off. There's no question about it. She came in blazing. She was the talk of the past few weeks and then just kind of fizzled out. And maybe it's because she's not getting the mic time she was. She's just kind of being put in these tag matches with Bayley. So I don't want that. I need Sasha to be the focal point of that team right now, especially
mm-hmm. on be the boss.
Yeah. I don't need to have you tell me you're the boss. Show me you're the boss. Right. I don't need to hear Michael Cole say it's boss time. I'm done with that. I don't need that for the 100th time. And so, yes, just they've lost a little steam with Sasha. They can easily get it back. It's repairable. And I think, as you said, that could be match of the night easily at Hell in a Cell. Sasha's been in the cell before with Charlotte, and this, I think, is going – they could easily top it. I think Becky and Sasha have great chemistry, so –
Definitely. So, speaking of SmackDown this week, Kevin Owens and Shane McMahon.
This they're going the legalese way. They're going with the I'm suing you. And you know, WWE is no stranger to the storyline lawsuits and contractually obligated storylines. I mean, Stone Cold did it with Vince McMahon. I don't know how many times, and you know, so it's introduced. What I don't want them to do is turn this into, you know, Judge Mathis. I don't need them to do this. I need them to turn this into something very easy for people to follow. They don't need to get into the nitty gritty of this, the lawsuit. Just keep it very basic. And I think ultimately what's going to happen is that this whole storyline is going to culminate at Hell in a Cell, that whatever Kevin Owens has in terms of when he said, I'm going to stand in this ring and tell you you're fired. I don't know how they get there or what's that. That's a whole thing's about. But clearly this is ending at a match in Hell in a Cell. What do you think about this whole thing?
I'm just still baffled that it's still going on, because I thought for sure SummerSlam was going to be it. Like, it was the perfect ending. Kevin Owens was in his hometown, got the big win, good to go. So I think I'm just still kind of, I feel like sometimes I'm in a twilight zone that, like, Kevin is still feuding with Shane, just because I want so much more for Kevin. He is such a good character, and regardless if he's a heel or a babyface, he's showing, even though it's not a great storyline, my opinion, it shows that if he was given the right angle with the right opponent and an actual wrestler who he could actually have multiple and, like, solid matches with, it would be something good and something that we could all sink our teeth into. And it would be more believable. Shane is fine in the ring. He somehow always puts on a decent match. But it's just, I just want so much more for Kevin. I'm just so ready for this to be over. So if it's not over at Hell in a Cell, I have no idea. I'm just not even going to talk about it anymore because I'll be so finished with it. And I hate to say it because Shane is good as a heel. Kevin is good as a babyface. I just want them apart. Like, just be done with it.
Yes. Yeah, I'm with you there. I hope they don't go with the tired storyline of if I beat you, Shane, you're fired or you're out of WWE. Because
yeah, because it's not believable.
No, it's
like,
not.
Like, come on. No one would ever believe that.
Even when at Fully Loaded in 1999, I even know the city, Buffalo, New York, where it took place, of Stone Cold and Vince McMahon with their blow off of their feud, when it's a first blood match with The Undertaker and Stone Cold, and when the whole contract read that if Stone Cold won, Vince McMahon was gone. And if Vince won, Stone Cold could never compete for the WWF Championship again. Obviously, Stone Cold wins. Vince McMahon is, quote, gone, yet he's back on Monday Night Raw the next night.
The next night.
Yeah, and then he goes away for a little while, and then what happens? Stone Cold reinstates Vince McMahon because that was a little bit of a – that was apparently a clause in the contract that only Stone Cold could bring Vince back. Or more recently, look at the Authority – Team Authority versus Team Cena. When he beat the Authority – and they go away for 3-4 weeks, and then they're back. So WWE has a very poor history of following through with their contracted negotiations or their storyline payoffs, blow-offs. And so if that's the whole deal, I would expect Shane to be off TV for no more than a month, and then suddenly he's back for some unknown reason. So I'm very leery of the stipulations of this match.
But even with this one, Kevin was fired just, what, last week?
Yep.
And he's back this week?
Yeah.
At least to their credit, they did it a little bit differently. Yes, they always seem to come back with a ticket. But at least they did it somewhat differently. And it made sense for Kevin to be able to get into the ring because Shane invited him. And little things like that I can appreciate. But even just with Kevin Owens. So, like, there's no way I would believe that if even Kevin Owens can't stay away for a week, that Shane McMahon would. Like, come on. Come on. Just don't do it. Just don't do it. You write the script. Like, it's not like you had to do this angle. Like, you, this was your idea.
It's just the WWE way. It's just, this isn't anything new. This has been going on for 20 years since the Attitude Era. They've been guilty of this kind of stuff. That they just can't help themselves. Or look no further, too, than the every time they do a draft, and every time apparently SmackDown is separate, Raw is separate, no one's going to cross over. Well, someone's going to cross over, but then there's the wild card rule. Wild card rule's not there anymore. They cannot help themselves or be disciplined enough to stick to their own damn stipulations. So with this whole new draft coming up in the middle of October, I expect the same exact thing to happen. They'll probably stay away from each other for maybe a month, maybe two, and then all of a sudden something will happen. Somebody will cross paths. Oh, it's Royal Rumble. Guess what? Now we're gonna have a match. I mean, something's going to happen where they just can't help themselves. And so I don't believe anything WWE says when they're gonna, stay the course. This is what's gonna happen. It's the final match. Even look what they did with Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens. How many matches they had? And I remember they said this is the final chapter.
Yes.
And what did they do? How many matches did they have after that? So I just have no faith when it comes to that stuff. So all right. Let's go on to the King of the Ring here, and I want to ask you, what do you think about King Corbin?
Yes, King Corbin. I think it was obvious, especially once Drew was eliminated, and it was down to Gable and Corbin. I think it was pretty obvious for a while. I was actually a little underwhelmed with the whole presentation, and I was very surprised that they actually did it on SmackDown. I don't know if that was just so Corbin could, like, rub it in Gable's face even more, because Gable technically shouldn't be on Raw, I think. I think his home show is SmackDown. Pretty sure. Anyway, but I was a little underwhelmed by the whole presentation this past week, but I'm excited to see King Corbin just throw it in everyone's face every week. But I hope it's his own words, because this week was so, like, scripted. He delivered it very well, don't get me wrong, and it was kind of clever, like, the words that they used and how everything tied in, but just let him be him, just that arrogant prick who just is just looking down everyone, literally with, you know, Gable, since that's the direction they seem to be going in with him, which is ridiculous. But yeah, I mean, it was like I said, pretty obvious. I'm kind of glad it's over with. The matches were really great, but I want them to push Gable now. I think he could be a very big star for them. Maybe not the top, but I could see him going on to win possibly Money in the Bank next year. Like, I think they could build him up to be like a Daniel Bryan type of character, but they have to do it now, and they have to keep this momentum going, and maybe have him pin Corbin just to get that victory back, and just have that momentum build from there. They probably won't, but I think that he could be a very good babyface for the company.
Yes, I mean, Corbin, I'm fine with his king to start there. I think Corbin is it's fitting. Is it predictable? Yeah, although I still would have chosen Drew McIntyre, who is just gone, yeah. By the way. I don't know. Is he injured, by the way? I haven't heard anything.
I don't think so. I think he's going to be one of those you disappear for a little while and then come back, which I'm fine by. He needs to be away and then just come back strong.
Yes, we need to forget the whole just misbooking and misuse of that man who belongs with a top championship right now. Mm-hmm. I want it would just be so awesome. But
picture him versus Brock Lesnar for the championship really quick. No, didn't mean to cut you off. But imagine if he gets drafted on SmackDown, shows up the next week, or that on that night, since that would be the week after Brock would have won the title. In their face-to-face. Just imagine that visual.
That is a great visual. The only, the only cold water I would pour on that is that the fact that Drew McIntyre has been defined down to being beaten by Roman Reigns time after time after time. I don't even know a big match that Drew McIntyre has won. So that's the problem. While it would be an awesome visual, in my mind, WWE doesn't define him in the same universe as Brock Lesnar, which is really unfortunate. Now, could they get there? Absolutely. And I think this time off for Drew is going to work miracles for him, provided that WWE has some actual solid storyline upon his return. So, King Corbin, I think that, yes, fine with it. I think that they could have done better than the styrofoam chair and the aluminum crown that they had and just the super cheap props. But I know what they were doing there, and I understand what they were doing. Clearly, this program with Chad Gable and Baron Corbin is going to continue, and I'm totally cool with that. I think I can speak for everybody in the entire WWE. I don't want to say WWE universe because I just still can't get used to that term. The entire WWE fan base that this whole deal that every heel has to pick on Chad Gable's height is just asinine. It's very lazy. It's very high school. Mm-hmm. It's very middle school. It's very elementary school. It is just very lowbrow and doesn't do anything other than reflect upon Vince McMahon of his still true beliefs of the fact that WWE wrestlers should be 6'5", 250 minimum, right? Like, that is just Vince McMahon and what he feels every wrestler should be, and I truly believe that. But the fact is that, number one, Chad Gable he's 5'8", okay? Rey Mysterio is 5'6". Eddie Guerrero is 5'8". Okay, some of these legends. Eddie Guerrero, for God's sakes, is 5'8". Chris Benoit is 5'10". Like, I could go on. So the fact that they are picking on this guy's height, I would just have him lay down exactly what I said. You know, I mean, stand up for yourself once in a while instead of, you know, standing there and sulking. He is an amazing performer. He's an Olympian athlete. And he doesn't have the balls to stand up for himself and just hang his head and shake his head and, you know, basically, you know, oh, woe is me. Like, stand up for yourself, dude. I mean, yes, he is one of my favorite guys to watch right now in WWE. He is a guy that brings you into his story in the ring. He doesn't say a whole lot, but my God, can he tell a story inside that ring.
And really quick before we move on, a few weeks ago when SmackDown was in Norfolk, I was at that show, and when I tell you, my entire section, and it felt like the entire arena, but I know for sure my section, we were so behind Chad Gable is when he was facing Elias. We lost our you-know-what when he won. We were so happy for him. And, like, once it died down and he went to the back and me and the person sitting beside me, we just started talking. And we were like, man, like, imagine if they actually built a decent storyline behind him, imagine the fan emotion and just the reaction that he would get. Because if he can get people this invested into his matches without really having a story, just imagine what he can do if they actually put more effort behind him and more time and dedicated more effort to him. It's just a shame. And that's why I hope that this whole thing with Baron Corbin ends up paying off for him. I hope that he gets so fed up with Baron Corbin picking on him and just being disrespectful and talking down to him that he just snaps and just unleashes like fury on him and just like keeps that going. So that's why I just really hope that they pull the trigger with him.
And it's kind of like they're not totally mistreating him, but it's because they put him in the finals
right.
of the King of the Ring. So I think they know what they have in terms of in-ring quality. I just think that they don't think that this could be a top hand. I think that they're like, yeah. he's a guy that, you know, he's a good hand. He's a B-plus player, as that whole phrase has been played out over the number of years now. But I don't think he'll ever reach that top tier. You know, he's a guy that he's easy to get behind. He's an underdog, but I don't see him ever really reaching the top. I think that's how they view him.
Yeah.
And it's unfortunate because, again, given a personality, which he does have one,
yeah.
He just gets so little mic time and so little actual character development that what's keeping him afloat is his insanely good wrestling skills, which is all he's got such a leg up here that if he puts it together with his persona and his character, this guy is going to skyrocket to the top.
Oh, he's money, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he's got Daniel Bryan Part 2 written all over him. He's not Daniel mm-hmm. Bryan, but he has the traits and the likability that ultimately led to people wanting to see Daniel Bryan and led him all the way to the main event of WrestleMania 30. So he has that kind of organic support behind him right now. It just depends on whether or not WWE decides to get behind him.
Yeah, I'm right there with you.
So the other thing, the other major thing coming out of the WWE machine this week is the whole Daniel Bryan, Eric Rowan, Luke Harper's back. And
which I'm so happy about.
Yeah, but he's still with Eric Rowan. So what do you think about all this?
Again, obviously, I am a huge Luke Harper fan. I met him back during WrestleMania Access. He was the nicest guy there. Like, he actually took time to talk with you and see what match you're looking forward to the most and just like actually have a conversation with you and not just take a picture and rush you out. So ever since then, like, I always like respected his in-ring work because he's just probably one of the best, if not the best, big men workers that they have. So I'd always been a fan of him, and I was always under the impression that out of the Wyatt family that he could have been like the breakout star, like from the very beginning when they were feuding with the Shield. So when he disappeared or whatever happened, when his release, whatever that situation was, I was very disappointed because he's such a good talent and such a shame to waste. So that's why I'm just super stoked that he's back. But I guess I'm not surprised that if they're going to bring it back now, that they would pair him up or have him involved with this whole Eric Rowan thing. I'm interested to see what he has to say, if he addresses his timeout, if he ends up being the whole mastermind behind it, or if he's just there just because he's Rowan's buddy, or just what role he actually plays in this. And if Daniel Bryan ends up coming back in, which again with him, he's one of those. Is he back to being a babyface now, or is he a tweener? Are we still supposed to not cheer him? So he's just to me kind of like on the fence of good guy or bad guy. But just this whole thing is just another one of those just crazy things where I'm just kind of ready to be over with it, or just at least just be have a definitive answer so we can say for sure, okay, Luke Harper was the mastermind, Eric Rowan played it out, or whatever direction they want to take it in, just settle on that, whether it's good, bad, or whatever at this point, and just move on from there.
Yeah, it feels a lot like Shane and Kevin Owens. Like, it's just like, okay. Like, I hope Hell in a Cell is the finale of this whole thing. I'm sorry, this whole storyline's been done pretty poorly. It was super interesting at the beginning, and then they played that video of Roman getting, you know, tackled with those boxes about 400 times, and it got super
interesting. Yeah.
If I never see that again, it'll be too soon. I can't watch it anymore. I actually turn away mm-hmm. from watching it because it's just or him getting, you know, nearly hit by the car. Like, I'm done with it. So, yes, Luke Harper returns. I'm a huge Luke Harper fan, too. I think he was one of the most underutilized talent. I think that is universally felt among the WWE fans. He's got an amazing look. His eyes are money. His eyes are just like that hollow, no one's there.
Like, you would, if you stare at him, and kind of like when he does that stare and turns his head so slightly, like, you're like, this guy's going to kill me.
Yeah.
Like,
no,
he gives off that feeling. And like, if he just went a little bit darker, like appearance wise, dude, talk about the Fiend. He could be another.
I mean, I know that's not what we're talking about, but now you got my mind rolling about what happens when the Fiend eventually interacts with Rowan Harper and Braun Strowman.
Daniel Bryan, if he's going back in and attacking people from his past.
Because there is a method to his madness now. So, now you got me rolling. But I'm thinking that with this whole storyline, it comes to a head at Hell in a Cell. It ends and dies there. Please die there. I'm ready for Luke Harper to get a fresh start and not be just involved in this convoluted storyline. Eric Rowan feels the most relevant as he has ever had, regardless of his non-reaction that he gets from the audience. And I'm struggling to feel something for him, but he still feels the most relevant he ever has, and you know, that's good. I know what they're trying to do and build new stars, and I respect that. But Daniel Bryan, is he a tweener? I don't know. He didn't really attack the fans. As the fans were chanting for him, he said, "You guys are the same fans that were accusing me of attacking Roman Reigns, and I never lie." So he didn't attack the fans. He just pointed out that the fans were the ones who were cheering him, were also accusing him a couple of weeks ago. So I don't know what to make of this. I would assume he's babyface based on the fact that he's being double teamed against Rowan and Harper. So that's my assumption. But, I mean, who knows? This could all be a big ploy, and it could be Daniel Bryan still behind this. As crazy as that sounds, Daniel Bryan could still be the one in the mastermind to lead this Rowan and Harper group. It's a possibility. So there's just so many weird angles that this could take. I'm ready for this to go, yeah, we're done with this.
Yeah, same here, man.
So the last thing that I wanted to touch on with you is another return. And that is the Bulgarian mustache brute.
Oh, Rusev. Yes.
So he gets involved with this Mike Kanellis storyline.
Oh, my gosh.
For weeks and weeks and weeks, we have seen Maria Kanellis just completely humiliate and neuter Mike Kanellis backstage, and she won the 24/7 championship. She forced him to lay down for her so she could win the belt, humiliating her, suggesting that the baby in her belly is not his, of which I would have said, then what the hell are you doing here, Mike?
Right.
Like, the second she said that, get a paternity test.
Right.
Yeah. Like
something.
It made no sense, but anyway, so Maria comes out and claims Ricochet at their gender reveal party that Ricochet is the one who was the father. Obviously, he wasn't. And then she comes out after he loses to Ricochet and says, you know, I want to tell you who the real father of my child is. And it's Rusev. So many levels to this that are just wrong. But you go ahead and start your thoughts on this.
So I don't know what's wrong with me, but I thought this whole segment was just like the funniest thing. Like, I don't know, maybe like it's been so many years of WWE just like beating like insane things into my brain that I thought this was kind of comical. But when she said it was Ricochet, and Ricochet just looked shocked, and he was like, "No, it's not me." And then he said something to the effect of, "I mean, not that I wouldn't, but it wasn't me." Like,
dude's
actually showing personality. Like, that's actually kind of funny. Like, good for him. Like, he's like that. That's a logical response. You know, a nice guy, not trying to be disrespectful to a woman, but you know, still trying to stand his ground. Like, it wasn't me. I mean, not that I wouldn't, but it wasn't me. So I just thought that was kind of like a cool little touch. And you could, in the match that he had against Mike was fun. Like, you could tell, like, I don't think it really ended up hurting Ricochet. I think it actually kind of showed how strong Ricochet is, because you could tell Ricochet wasn't ready for the match. Obviously, that was the angle they were going with, and Ricochet was just playing with Mike. Like, he was just like hitting his basic moves, but he wasn't really breaking a sweat. So I think that was cool, and it was logical. Like, it shouldn't have been an even match with what they're doing with Mike right now. But Rusev coming out, totally did not expect that. When I saw the mustache, I busted out laughing again, just because I just wasn't expecting a mustache like that. And it's just, he looks like his body, like he slimmed down so much. Like he looks so good in the haircut and everything. It's funny that he, of all people, is the big reveal as like the baby's father. Now, whether they continue to go with that or she was just messing with Mike again or whatever, but just seeing Rusev come out in this and be involved in this whole crazy thing is just insane.
And now you're kind of like selling me on this thing. I mean, I was only down on it from the perspective of that storyline wise, like how the hell, number one, is Mike Kanellis still with Maria? How is Lana tied into all this? Like, is Rusev just suddenly not married and knocks up a woman and Lana's cool with it? Like, I mean, so that's a little bit weird. I mean, so there's a lot of loose ends that don't make sense to me. But now that you talk about it, I mean, Rusev is generally believed to be one of the funniest guys genuinely backstage. And I believe that. Rusev's got a hell of a sense of humor on him. And I'm sure he knows the mustache looks ridiculous. So that's,
oh, yeah.
It makes it look even funnier. I mean, so,
exactly.
Yeah. Yes, he's transformed his body pretty damn well. And he comes out and just destroys Mike Kanellis, of which I don't know why he's attacking Mike Kanellis, because Mike Kanellis is her husband.
Right.
He's not married to Maria. So shouldn't Mike be the one that's angry and not Rusev? But nonetheless.
But he tried to get out of the match. He was like, you know what? I don't even care. Or something like that. Like,
oh,
he tried to get out.
He's like, you know what? I'm done. Yeah.
So again, like I actually thought that they were going to be done with this whole angle because they hadn't mentioned it or done anything at all with either of them in a few weeks. So when they had mentioned that, you know, the segment was going to be the gender reveal, I was like, oh my gosh, like what kind of campy, you know, what is this going to be? But it was the funniest thing. And actually too, when I saw Rusev, and it kind of made me think back. Do you watch Total Divas? I don't.
Not really. I mean, a few episodes, but.
So I didn't watch it for the longest time, for years, and then randomly saw an episode and just kind of got hooked for some weird, it's like a guilty pleasure type thing. So I started from the beginning, and Rusev in a certain season had wanted to start a family with Lana, and it caused tension between them two. So when I saw Rusev come out on Monday, I was like, yo, maybe they're gonna, if they really truly go forward with this, maybe Rusev is pissed at Lana because Lana didn't want to start a family, and they kind of tie that into Total Divas because it's a new season starting soon, and you know they love to cross promote. So I kind of thought about that too, if this is something that they're truly going to go forward with, they can kind of like bring real world and real life situations into the script.
Yeah, maybe that is the case,
and maybe they didn't even think that much into it, but that's what I thought of too.
If they tie Total Divas into that, I mean, I'm fine with that. I'm sure the Total Divas obviously is embellished too, but that could be the case. And, you know, I've heard rumblings of that over the years too, about that whole deal with him wanting to start a family and who she doesn't want to. So, but he married her, like legitimately married her. So there's, you know, I'm sure that they clearly have worked that out in real life. But yeah, now that you're talking about it, I mean, Rusev is a guy that has, God, I love his sense of humor. I mean, he does such subtle things that are hilarious. Even as a heel, I remember him doing it. And so he's always been a great heel, I think, underutilized. And when he first came and debuted, he was undefeated for how many months? I loved that. And then after John Cena beat him at WrestleMania, he just fell off a cliff. So John Cena got out that mythical golden shovel, and that was the end of Rusev. I'm glad that he's back. The mustache is actually pretty funny. And I just don't know where they're going with this, because you can't have a program with Rusev and Mike Kanellis. It's just a squash. So there has to be some other payoff to this. I'm glad they actually followed up on it, because this storyline was all but gone and forgotten for a few weeks.
Literally forgot about it, like, completely. And then when I saw a tweet or something, I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. And that's why it was. So I was kind of looking forward to it in a weird way. And, let's see. I mean, and it's funny too, because it's not like they're not even from the beginning. Like, it wasn't like Maria was the breadwinner. Maria was the one who was like the main wrestler. Like, she wasn't wrestling. She was like his manager. He was doing the wrestling. Like, he was out there, you know, like working. So to see him just like be like her puppet and like her, you know, like her slave pretty much, is just kind of like an interesting twist. In a weird way. Like, it's so weird. Yeah. It's so weird that I'm, like, intrigued by this. It's I don't know how to feel about it.
Yeah, it's like, it was kind of like that.
It makes you question yourself.
Yeah, bordering kind of not on PG type of thing.
Right. And some of the comments and jokes that they made.
Yeah. Like, we all know what we're thinking. And, right. Like, you know, they were bordering and suggesting that. And, I mean, maybe that's what they were doing, but they couldn't go full-fledged because it's not TV-14. I don't know. But now that, damn it, now you got me kind of sold on the storyline, and now I'm, like, wanting to see what happens next week. So, damn it. Well, Ashley, thank you so much for being on the show. I definitely am looking forward to the next time we talk. But before we do, let everybody know about where they can find you and the other podcasts that you do actually live tonight.
Yeah, thank you so much. It's always fun talking to you again. I've said this numerous times. This is like a therapy session, so I appreciate it. But yeah, they can. You guys can follow me on Twitter at @ashmanns. Love to talk with you guys. But yeah, the other show that I'm on is Wrestle Rewind. You can listen to us on any of the podcast apps, the Apple Podcast, Spotify, all that good stuff. And on Facebook Live every Thursday at 8:30, we have a video stream going where you can chat with us and just talk more wrestling. So definitely check us out if you like.
And you can check out her article at WWEPodcast.com
that you
did about The Fiend. And anytime that you get the urge while you're at work to just say, hey, I need to get this off my chest let me know and we'll put it up.
I will. Real quick, it was funny because I was listening to your recap from Raw and I was just like, I hope my... no one from work listens to this, but I'm sure they don't. Just because they don't like wrestling, not because it's your show. But they're just like, oh, wrestling like Hulk Hogan, like that's the only name they know.
Oh, yeah, one I of get those it things. All the time. We know.
Yeah. So like I was just sitting listening to you talk about Raw and everything, and I was just started thinking about The Fiend, and I was like, well, why are we just so invested in him? Yeah, he's cool, but like there's other cool characters, but why is this one like sticking with us? And just like something clicked like on Raw when I saw him interact with Kane, because Kane, they were in Tennessee, his hometown, the city that he's the mayor of. Nice. And they started cheering for The Fiend, so that just like blew my mind. So that's what prompted me to do all that. So it was mainly because of you, Matt. You inspired me.
Well, I don't want to get you in trouble at work at the same time.
No, I'm good.
So, all right. Well, Ashley, thank you so much for being on the show. Everybody, check out Wrestle Rewind Thursdays at 8:30 live on Facebook Live and anywhere you can get podcasts. So, Ashley, thank you so much for coming on the show. We'll do this again in a few weeks.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me.
All right. Take care.
You too.